I was really still getting into the physician finance space and learning about personal finance. And I kept coming up on real estate investing and seeing and hearing people being successful in it and why it could be successful and less speculative way of investing in it like you and I do. And my initial thought was just what most people is, I can't do that. I don't know anything about it. I don't have enough time. But it just kept coming up enough.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor!
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 Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Physicians and Properties, the podcast where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. Today we have another amazing episode. Dr. Jordan Fry is a plastic surgeon in Buffalo, New York at Erie County Medical Center and the University of Buffalo. His clinical focus is on breast reconstruction and complex microsurgery. He's also the founder of The Prudent Plastic Surgeon, one of the fastest growing finance blogs. There, he shares his journey to financial well-being with the goal of helping all physicians reach financial freedom to practice medicine on their own terms. Guys, this episode was incredible. Such a great opportunity to get to know Dr. Fry, who is an incredibly humble plastic surgeon. We started out all the way at the beginning, his journey into medicine, his journey as he's pursuing financial freedom. We talked about his incredible blog called The Prudent Plastic Surgeon and a course that he created there, how he got into real estate. We talk a lot about the snowball, how he bought one duplex in Buffalo, New York, and that snowballed into 16 cash flowing units in 2.5 years, netting approximately $10,000 per month in cash flow. This is an incredible episode. Thanks for listening. Hey, Dr. Fry, thanks for coming on the Physicians and Properties podcast. So happy you're here. How are things going?
All good. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Awesome. Really excited to get you on the show. I've been reading the blog for a bit at The Prudent Plastic Surgeon and learning a lot of great information there. So happy to have this conversation in person, at least over the computer, and looking forward to connecting. Yeah. If you don't mind, I'd love to just go back to the beginning, your journey into medicine and plastic surgery, and then we'll start there if that's okay with you.
Getting into medicine, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I ended up going to college away at Emory University, and I went there thinking I was going to do business because that's what my family had done. I always liked science in high school, but I thought I was going to do business. I ended up going down there doing business for a year and just finding it really boring, and it wasn't hitting the right notes for me. So I ended up switching to a science major. And I was just, do I want to be a chemist? I don't really think I want to be a chemist. So what's like the practical application of science? And that was medicine. And so that's how I got into that. And then plastic surgery was really like a coincidental sort of lucky happenstance, because I knew I probably wanted to do surgery because I liked working with my hands, but I thought I wanted to do orthopedic surgery. That was not really clicking for me either when I got into it and saw what it actually was. So I was pretty confused, like my third year of medical school, what I was going to do. I ended up, I had a neonatology rotation as an elective. And last minute I decided I didn't want to do pediatrics, so maybe I'll change it. And the only elective available was like a craniofacial plastic surgery rotation. So I signed up for that and I ended up loving it because I thought, most people, you know, plastic surgery is just the aesthetic side of it. That's what's mostly seen. But then I got to see a lot of the cool reconstructive things that also were involved. And I really just fell in love with it. I got into it a little bit late in the game, but was fortunate to have some awesome mentors and got some research done and ended up matching at NYU and going there for 7 years, 6 years for residency, one for microsurgery, and just really loving it. And now I moved back to my hometown, Buffalo, with my wife and now 3 kids. We had 2 when we moved, and joined a practice there that's a hospital-based practice and really loving it. And most of what I do is breast reconstruction.
That's awesome. You know, I blown away all the time with what you guys can do in plastic surgery. It's incredible. I went to med school in Richmond at the Medical College of Virginia, and I'm blanking on his name, but wasn't the facial transplant surgeon from NYU? He came and spoke to us, and it was just unbelievable, that whole process, everything that went into that facial transplant. I'll never forget it. So that was really eye-opening for me on, like, goodness, it's just incredible what plastic surgeons can do. So thanks for doing that. And I agree. And I, of course, we all understand it's definitely way more than the cosmetic side of things. And, you know, what a long journey to get to where you are now. How did it feel when you were finally done with residency and fellowship and then now in attending? How did that feel, that transition?
It feels good now. It's a good segue, I guess, because it was funny at the end of my training, that's what I thought was, okay, finally, I'm going to be an attending. Everything's going to be good. I had that arrival fallacy and waiting of being like, okay, I'll be happy when I'm an attending. And I was finally getting ready to graduate, like a year away, half a year away. And I was really stressed because everyone was telling me that, oh, you're going to be an attending. It's going to be great. You're going to be making all this money. Finally, it's all worth it. Like, it all paid off. And in my head, I was just like, it's not going to be great. And I remember venting to my wife one night and I was like, I don't know what to tell people. It's just not, like, they don't understand. And I was so stressed. And I realized I was actually feeling burnt out. And a lot of it was due to a lack of financial well-being. And people were telling me all this again, it's going to be great. But I had $500,000 of student debt. I had credit card debt. I had no savings, no investments, didn't know how to go about that. Two young kids. And yeah, my salary was definitely going to go up from being a resident, but it just seemed like my spending was going to immediately jump up to meet that right away. Cause everyone was telling me, oh, you have to get a certain type of car, a certain house, dress a certain way, get a watch, everything like that. So I was actually super stressed out at that point. And that's when I started paying attention to finances and learning about it. And thankfully, my wife and I, we really did this together, and that turned things around so that when I did finally graduate, my wife was at the same time finishing her PhD. And when we did that, and when we moved and I became an attending and she became a professor, we really felt like we did it in the right way and were able to really enjoy it and still enjoy it to this day. But it wasn't smooth by any means.
Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that. A lot to unpack. I felt the same way. As you coming out of residency, like I said, I do family medicine, but I remember the same thing, being so excited out of residency, now going to be an attending. And I found out that I was going to Schriever Air Force Base, now Space Force Base, but I'm Air Force, and got there and realized I was the only physician that was there. And so I went from all this support in the residency program, all these great minds to bounce ideas off, and now it's me and a few NPs and PAs. And so that was an interesting experience for me to walk into and supposed to be the subject matter expert and the kind of final answer, but not have a lot of folks to call on. And luckily, great friends and mentors that I was able to reach out to and folks at some other bases. But that was the shock for me, a little bit more so than the financial perspective. I was fortunate to be military and have the Air Force pay for all my student loans, which was fantastic through the HBSP program. And thinking back to it, that's what kind of keeps folks from maybe doing primary care or maybe doing different specialties, because they see this huge loan burden and they're like, wow, I need to do something else. I can't go be a pediatrician or a family medicine physician making 200K. I need to specialize and make more money to pay off all the student loan debt. I think, and I'm sure you probably agree, that's something that we're going to be dealing with for a while as folks shy away from primary care due to smaller salaries. I still have this huge student loan burden. Interesting take that you have on that as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a huge factor. And like, I hear that all the time, because I'm fortunate in plastic surgery is on the higher end of what specialties are paid for sure. And that happened to line up really well with just what I love to do. So that's a fortuitous thing. But so many times people say, I love pediatrics, let's say, that always kind of get picked on a little bit as a lower paying specialty. And not saying pediatricians still make good money when you compare it to quote unquote regular folks, but it's much lower. And when you consider the loan, people say, I really want to do this, but I feel like it's almost irresponsible. Is it? And it's a tough thing. I never quite know exactly what to say because you want to follow your passion, but it is a tougher road, especially if you had to take out loans, especially for college and for part of medical school. I don't know that the but it's an interesting one to think about.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's options certainly now in the military and so forth as well. And I get that question a lot. The military is a good avenue to go down if you want to be in the military. And the
right.
benefit is that you get your student loans paid off. If you have zero desire to go in the military, I tell folks all the time, it's not the job for you. If you want any sort of control over your job, it's not the job for you. If you've always had that desire to serve and serve an incredible patient population, it's definitely worth it. You mentioned something during your story that I think happens to all of us, or at least it's something that every physician thinks, and that's lifestyle creep. The, hey, I'm an attending physician now and I need to drive the Mercedes and the Tesla and have a really nice car, really nice clothes. How do you feel like folks can combat that lifestyle creep, or at least those thoughts?
Yeah, that was one of the hardest things for me because I didn't even realize what that was or realize that it was happening, even though it was already prematurely happening for me. Like I was planning out kind of the purchases or the image that I needed to fit as a plastic surgeon. And it took looking at myself and my values, obviously within our family framework, both of us, my wife and I, but looking at what was important and what wasn't and saying, listen, we're just going to follow that. We're not going to try to follow whatever we think the prevailing image is. We're not going to try to keep up with proverbial Joneses and stuff like that. And I always tell people, it's like this idea of spending intentionally. Because what we usually do is spend unintentionally, which is we don't put a lot of critical thought into what we're buying. We just buy using like the system one part of our brain, which is just like the rapid fire kind of part of our brain. And we get a little dopamine hit and then it wears off and we seek another and another. And so transitioning that to starting to think about our purchases and bring it into the more critical thinking system two part of our brain. And just thinking like before any purchase, whether it's big or small, number one, can I buy this and can I still be okay financially? Which for doctors, most of the time, the answer is yes, because we're higher paid. But then you have to think, okay, am I going to get the amount of joy out of this relative to the money that I'm putting in? And I think that's what helped me a lot is just looking at purchases and like, I tell people it's not about not spending money or being overly frugal or something like that. Like I still spend a lot of money, but I just spend it on the things that are really important to me after I've saved and to put us on the path to financial freedom. With the rest, we try to spend pretty aggressively on the things that are important to us and not the things that aren't. And that tends to be experiences. And so that was really tough. I think especially, it's with all doctors, but I think especially as a plastic surgeon, there's a certain kind of stereotype. And you go to one of the meetings and everyone's wearing some fancy suit and has a $1,000 watch and all this stuff that honestly I couldn't really care less about. But I felt, oh, if I'm going to be doing this, that's how I have to look too. And thankfully, I've just found that's not the case at all. I drive like a Toyota and my patients don't care. My referrers don't care. I go to all the meetings and just, I'm more casual, just wearing like dress pants and dress shirt and not going crazy with anything. It's all fine. I still get invited to the panels. So it was all made up in my head, but I think it's a really powerful thing that we all project onto ourselves.
I agree. I think we have imposter syndrome in medicine in general, and imposter syndrome from the financial perspective and investing as well. And that's certainly something we could probably spend a lot of time talking on. I was thinking about this as you were discussing it. Have you ever heard of the 10-year plan? I have the 10-year idea in terms of spending. I have a friend who mentioned this on his podcast, Brian Lubin, and it's essentially, hey, if you're going to remember this event, this experience, this thing in 10 years, and you can afford it, then do it. But if not, then what's the point? Is it going to be really worth it? And so I've really started looking through that framework. I got to give a credit to Brian Lubin, my buddy who told me that. But I've been using that a lot because I think I'm quite a frugal person. And I think I've probably missed out on some things just because I want to penny pinch and save as much as possible. And I really started looking through that lens and it was freeing. So maybe that's helpful to someone listening. It's what you fill your cup up with. For us here in the Shalow household, it's more experiences and spending time with family and traveling. And so that I'm totally fine spending money on. Thing I think sometimes folks think is that they can't spend money at all. And like even getting a latte is going to prevent them from getting to financial freedom. And I don't think that's right either. And so I think it's just finding that balance as with everything.
Yeah, I agree. And that's something I'm continuing to work on because I also tend to be one who I'm like, okay, we're saving this amount of every paycheck and we're investing in X, Y, and Z, and we have this much left over. And I find myself still being like, okay, how much of what's left over can we save? And so I've really been working being like, okay, we actually don't need to save any of that. Like we're saving what we said we were going to save. So now we can use this to exactly what you're saying. Fund those things that we're going to remember in 10 years. And it is a constant battle in remembering that. I think I've gotten a little bit better, but I'm still working on it.
Yeah, I think it's something we'll probably have to work on for a while. What got you started on your journey towards financial freedom? What really lit the fire for that and then ultimately leading to the Prudent Plastic Surgeon and everything that stands for?
Yeah, it was when I was going through that transition, like I said, between the end of training and becoming an attending. And I realized, like I said, that I was experiencing burnout. I was losing my love for plastic surgery and medicine and all those classic symptoms. And a big part of it I attributed to that lack of financial well-being when I really looked at it, because I was bitter. I was like, all of us, we give our kind of our 20s, or in most cases, give our 20s to medicine. And then you come out with a certain sort of expectation of, okay, this is why we did that. And it wasn't really meeting up for me. And a lot of that was, again, because I was just in such a financial hole. I didn't see a way of getting out of it. I saw a life of financial stress, not the life that I had planned and we had planned for our family. And thankfully, what we did, instead of just wallowing in that or sitting in that, we decided we were going to learn a lot about personal finance. And the first book we read was Millionaire Next Door, which I think is an awesome book. But that was the first time I was like, oh, wow, we can, hey, this is what financial freedom is. This is a concept that exists. Never understood that. And B, like, we can reach it. And anyone can reach it. But especially as physicians, we're high-income earners. We have an even better shot if we do the right things. And so then we just slowly kept learning and implementing things that seem silly now, which is creating a savings rate. We didn't even understand that concept. We certainly spent everything that we made. And we didn't necessarily have a ton that we could save at the beginning, living in New York City with two kids, but we were able to create a savings rate of like 1% and then go to 2%, et cetera. And then when, you know, we got real jobs, it was much easier to do that and save a bigger percentage. The learning to invest just in index funds, eventually that leading to real estate, which is a little bit further down the road for us. But the culmination was really, we came up with a financial plan of just, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to save this much. This is where we're going to allocate our money to pay off debt, to invest, et cetera. And all of a sudden we had a plan in to be able to pay off our debt in 5 to 7 years, to be able to reach financial freedom in 20 some years. And that was really freeing, because finally I was like, okay, all we have to do is follow this plan and we're going to reach it. And I found without that weight, I didn't have the same bitterness towards medicine. I found that I was enjoying medicine a lot more. The little things that used to bother me or be like, God, this just sucks. We have to deal with X, Y, and Z. And like, I still have this much debt or whatever. It didn't bother me as much, because I was just like, okay, this is a little hassle I have to deal with in order to do this work, which I think is really fulfilling. And so in that sense, I truly felt like I became a better doctor, which is why I always tell people. And that then led to the Prudent Plastic Surgeon, because I felt like everything I was being told before was that money was not important. You shouldn't think about money as a doctor, because we didn't get into it for money. And that made us lesser than as a doctor. And what I found was the complete opposite. I felt like when I started thinking about money or paying attention to my money and my financial well-being, that's when I became a better doctor. And I just saw other people being told the same taboo and falling under it the same way I had. And I just want to say, No, these things aren't mutually exclusive. Like actually paying attention to your financial well-being is important for your overall well-being, important for you as a doctor, important for your patients because you're going to provide better patient care. And there's a big difference between paying attention to financial well-being and manipulating patient care in the name of greed, which I think is what people worry about, but that's a very different thing. So that's how all that came about. And we're still on the journey. We have not reached financial freedom. I'm still paying off debt. So I'm very much still on the path and like to talk about all my mistakes as much as my little successes up to this point.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's one thing I really love about your content and the blog is your transparency. I think it's really easy to write or talk about all the successes that we've had and the investments that went really well, but sometimes we either afraid to share or are hesitant to share those investments that didn't go as well. And oftentimes, I know personally, I learn more from those experiences or hearing about those experiences and reading about them. So thanks for being so transparent on the blog about that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the financial plan, what would you tell a resident or someone who's about to be an attending? What is important to go into the financial plan? I know you mentioned savings rate, but what are some kind of basic outline or a basic outline of a financial plan if someone's looking to get started in that?
Yeah, I think the biggest components are like how we broke it down, I think is to start, you want to list out your financial goals and order them. So like for us, a huge financial goal was become debt-free. Another one then became reach a net worth of, and it can be X number of dollars. We just said $1 million by this year in 10 years, whatever it is. And you just want to throw them out there and be pretty aggressive. Make X amount of money in cash flow from real estate in 5 years, whatever, what have you. And then once you've listed them all out in no particular order, order them in a priority list. And then I try to convert that into financial priorities, which is different from the goals in that the goals almost like just that. It's the end point, but then the priority is the action that's going to get you there. So it just helps you to look and say, oh, we ranked becoming debt-free as our number one goal. So our number one priority is going to be pay off debt. Then we wanted to reach a net worth of X amount of dollars. We're going to do that by investing. So invest this much money every year, things like that. And then we just wrote how we were going to invest, which at the beginning was simply index funds. We said we're going to have 80% of our investments in stock index funds and 20% in bond index funds. We're going to rebalance once a year. We wrote what we're not going to do, which is we're not going to pick individual stocks. We're not going to try to time the market. And then eventually we added real estate into that. So we wrote out how we were going to invest in real estate. But it's really helpful. It's like a 1 to 1.5 page document that we have, and we can refer back to it if we ever get lost or feel like we're not on the right track. We can remind ourselves why we're doing this and how we're doing it. If we get tempted by other things, crypto is like a huge thing. It's obviously tamped down a bunch, but like a year or so ago, it was a huge thing. And so even I was like, am I just missing something here? But going back and looking at that plan and being like, no, you know what? Like all we have to do is this and we're going to reach our goals. So we don't need to do anything else. This is what we said we're going to do. So we're going to keep doing it. It's just really helpful. And even my wife and I, we've posted on my blog our actual financial plan. So you can go on there and see it just as like a jumping off point for anyone who's looking to get started.
Yeah, definitely check that out. I'm sure that'll be really helpful for folks. You mean you didn't have Dogecoin and GameStop on your financial plan though?
I didn't. I guess thankfully now, but at a time I was like, man, we only knew.
I know the same way I didn't invest in that stuff either, but my buddy was like, you know what? Let me just throw $500 in Dogecoin. And I think it ended up making $15,000. And I was like, yeah. But anytime I've had any speculative investment or tried to pick a stock, it's always ended poorly. So I completely agree. The low cost index funds, let them do the work and just keep on investing and set it where it's automatically drafted out of your account. Certainly a good balance of stocks and real estate. I'm definitely more real estate heavy, but I think there's certainly a place for stocks, in stocks and bonds and so forth, these alternative investments that can be beneficial. You said you got into real estate down the road. Do you mind if we jump ahead to what that journey has looked like?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll say, it's funny dovetailing off. I think a lot of people are like that. We like to feel like we're active in our investments and making the right decisions. And when it comes to stocks, it just really does pay to be passive. But real estate has filled that gap of the active sort of management type of thing for me. And I think that's been a little plus of it. But yeah, so let's say this whole journey started my fellowship year. So that was like 2019 to 2020. And then July of 2020, we moved to Buffalo. And I had this period of a month before I started working. And so I was really still getting into the physician finance space and learning about personal finance. And I kept coming up on real estate investing and seeing and hearing people being successful in it and why it could be successful and less speculative way of investing in it like you and I do. And my initial thought was just what most people say is I can't do that. I don't know anything about it. I don't have enough time. But it just kept coming up enough that I was like, I should learn a little bit more about it. I should at least see. And so I ended up just getting Rich Dad, Poor Dad, reading that, and then reading some more blogs. And I went to my wife and it was just like, listen, I think we should invest in real estate. Like, I think we should buy real estate. And again, this was like a month after we moved and I was just starting my job. And she was just like, are you crazy? Like, why do you want to do this? We don't have enough things going on. But to her credit, she said, listen, I don't know, but I'll learn about it. I'll look into it. And we can see and talk about this. So she did. And eventually she thought the same thing. She was like, you know what? We can do this for sure. Like, why not us? We're no less smart than any of the other people doing it successfully. Let's get into it. So we started looking at properties around that time, which now is like 2.5 years ago. I was actually looking the other day and our first investment property will have owned 3 years in October. So 5 months from when we're recording this. But yeah, so our first thing, we started interviewing investor agents after we chose our market and we chose Buffalo. We wanted to at least start local. It took a bit of a leap because when we researched what are the best markets, Buffalo is actually on a bunch of lists for the worst markets.
No.
But we'll find something, we'll make it work. We understood the whole concept of cash and we like, you know, this first one we're going to learn from, we're going to see how it goes. So we chose to stay local. We wanted our first one to actively manage and learn from. So we interviewed investor agents. We ended up finding one that we really liked and we started looking for properties. And we, at the beginning, didn't really know what we were doing, but we learned on the fly and we would just ourselves look at properties that came up on the MLS or Redfin and our agents would send us ones or more often we would send to them and they'd be like, that is not a good property. That is not, either that's not an area you want or listen, that one does not cash flow. But then they would send us some that looked good. And eventually we found one and we ran the numbers on it and we saw that it had like a 10% cash on cash return, which is generally the goal that we're looking for. It was a duplex with one bedroom on the top and then a 3-bedroom on the bottom. And we ended up going and putting an offer and getting it. And then we found out late at night, like 10 p.m. or something, that our offer was the one accepted. And we were just like, holy shit, what did we get ourselves into? What are we doing? And it all eventually worked out. And just like you said, you figure it out, you learn on the fly. We did self-manage that. So we eventually closed on it. We put tenants in and we managed it and ended up going great. And like I said, we own that one now 3 years and the cash flow is around like 23%. So it's really been great. And that sort of ultimately became our strategy. And we didn't necessarily even intend it to. We thought we're going to start small. We're going to get one and then we'll probably scale up and look for bigger properties. It ended up that we've just continued to buy small, either 2 or 3 unit places in the city of Buffalo. And that's just ended up being a really good niche. It's something know now we can look at a property pretty quickly and say, okay, at this price point in this area with about this many repairs needed, this is what we can expect. And the bigger places just have not been as good value. So we've just stuck in this niche. We've now grown to 7 properties and 16 units. And we cash flow with those about $10,000 a month. And that's been really nice. And the last one we bought was probably 6 or so months ago. We've just been looking for the right deal as interest rates rise. We haven't seen the prices come down to match it necessarily. So we've been holding steady for now and we keep looking. And when a good deal does come up, we'll buy it. But I like to say, I think the way we did it was good because it does demonstrate it's not, real estate is not like a get rich quick scheme, which I think unfortunately a lot of times it can be intentionally or unintentionally portrayed as that, but it's not. Like our first duplex that we got it for $176,000, but it cash flowed around $1,000 a month, which is not much at all. For most physicians, that's not going to make a huge dent. It was a big process in terms of getting the property, managing it, renting it. So for a lot of people, they're like, what's the point of that? But you have to see the long term. And what happened is we just saved that $1,000 a month every single month. We put some of our paycheck aside. We ultimately used that to buy a second property that then cash flowed another $1,000. We saved that $2,000 a month, put some more aside, and bought a third property, which this was a 3-unit that happened to be an awesome deal and cash flows $2,500 a month. And it just starts snowballing from there. And so it's easy now. People look and go, oh my gosh, 2.5 years, you guys did all that. That's amazing. But no one was excited by after the first one or after the second one. It takes that patience to build up. And that's not saying if you have a huge lump sum, yes, your first property, you can buy a much bigger one and that's fine. But a lot of people don't. And they cool off on the idea of real estate investing when they see the impact of one deal, which is not always a ton. And so I just encourage people, I tell them it's like a snowball or it's like a flywheel. It's not like a rocket ship. You got to spin the wheel for a while and gain your momentum. And eventually it just starts going on its own. And then, yeah, it seems very impressive, but it's due to all that work you put in up front.
Yeah, absolutely. It is impressive that from 1 to 16 units in 2.5 years. But everybody I talk to says the same thing. The hardest thing is buying that first property. It's taking that first leap. Oh, and it's scary. The first property that I bought was a $191,000 house in Florida when I was stationed at Eglin. And I used a physician loan, which is a fantastic product. No money down. It cost me $58 out of pocket to buy this house. And I remember being terrified. And I knew the mortgage was like $1,000. And even in residency, we weren't making a ton of money, but I knew I could cover it. And we still have that as a rental and it performs great and super grateful for that. But that was the seed. That was the initial start building of the snowball and go from there. And then it just makes every property so much easier. And those more expensive properties seem way less scary. All about the numbers and the metrics and what you're looking at. And I think that numbers right now, as you alluded to as well, in the higher interest rate environment, your numbers are way more important. What are some things that you look at in a property, some numbers, if someone's starting to analyze deals that may be beneficial for them, especially this higher interest rate market?
What we use is basically cash on cash return, which is essentially how much money are you collecting every year in terms of pure profit. So after you pay the mortgage, after you pay the maintenance, all that stuff, divided by the actual money that you put in. So the down payment, if you're using a mortgage, plus the initial repairs and closing costs, that. And so we look for it to be 10% or greater. And it takes some estimates. And the first time, that's the scariest part, I think, is they really feel like estimates because you don't have the experience. After a while, you get to go, okay, yeah, I know it costs about this much for us to turn over a unit. I know it costs about this much a month in terms of maintenance. But that's really what we look for is cash flow. And that's a huge buffer. And it's not the only way you make money in real estate, but it's the one that's most important in terms of your own protection. Because as long as the property's cash flowing, you're not coming out of pocket for it. Like, we don't invest hoping that our property is going to market appreciate a ton in like a year and then we're going to sell it. We know historically that the property is going to appreciate over a long period of time. And so we plan to hold it for a long period of time before we would sell it, if we ever do, or if we just keep it and eventually give it to our kids or something like that. But that cash flow protects it. People are really nervous. The housing prices started to really decrease after they had been skyrocketing for so long. But for us, we didn't really care. In one or two instances, our home value of the investment property dipped a little bit below even what we paid for it. And we're just like, we don't care. It's still cash flowing. We're not planning to sell it anytime soon. Like, it could be worth $0 right now. I don't care. It's still making $1,500 a month. We'll just wait for it to come up again. But even then, we're not even planning to sell it. So what's it matter? So that I think is an important concept to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that cash flow is most important as well. And I think passive income cash flow, that offers the freedom that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And ultimately the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. And I think that it's a safety net. It's freeing to know, hey, regardless, as long as that tenant's in there, I'm going to make ballpark this much money on the property. And yeah, we certainly invest with cash flow in mind, and the appreciation is just the cherry on the top and to have, but we're not counting on it by any means. So I think that's really helpful. And I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know if you do either, but I don't see the interest rate environment sticking at 7.5%, 8% long term. I think we'll probably trickle back down from what I've been reading over the next couple of years, maybe down to 4.5%, 5%, which is a little bit more normal. I don't know if we'll ever see the twos again, which was glorious, but I don't know. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, same thing. I don't know. I expect everything generally cycles. So I expect it to go back down. When, I don't know. And ultimately, like, that interest rate is just another number in your calculations. So it's not, again, I'm saying we're just not investing because it's so prohibitive or something like that. I think it's taking time for the prices to come down to equilibrate with those increased interest rates. And if and when we find one that cash flows well at 7.5%, we'll, and if the rates go down, then we can refinance it, and that's perfect. I don't think anyone should feel the urge to create more lax criteria for what's a good deal or not a good deal. Just be patient. Eventually, the market always equilibrates, and rates, again, I think also will go down. Just looking at historically, things ebb and flow. There's no reason to rush and keep looking for deals and analyzing. If you find one, go for it. If not, just wait for the next one.
Yeah, I had the chance to interview Dr. Tom Burns, the Rich Doctor, for this podcast as well. And he had a quote that he used called active patience. And I really liked that and heard that before. And I think it's important now in this market. And he's basically, the theme behind it was just be patient, but still actively looking and understanding that this is a long play. This is a long game in real estate. It's a long game for financial freedom. And if it happens sooner, great. It's just taking these baby steps. It's getting started. It's adding $150, $200 a month in cash flow and just stacking that. And next in 2.5 years, you got 16 units and cash flow and $10,000 a month. So it's just getting started and starting that snowball. So for sharing that. Awesome. I want to be respectful of your time, but I did want to just ask you a couple other questions, if that's okay. What do you think, with all the research that you've done and all the writing that you've done, what do you think, quote unquote, the perfect portfolio would look like for a physician? Or what do you think, what does your portfolio look like in terms of, if you don't mind sharing, like, percentages of investments in stocks and bonds and real estate and in other investments? What do you think that looks like?
So when we started out, what we did was essentially we saved like 40% of our paycheck, and a third of what we saved, a third of that 40%, went to paying off loans, a third to investing in stocks and mainly in retirement accounts, and a third to saving for real estate investments. That now, in terms of what we save, roughly goes in the same direction. But in terms of net worth, real estate has become a bigger portion of that just because it's grown a lot quicker. So real estate, like investment real estate, is probably like 55 to 60% of our net worth. And certainly it's all of our passive cash flow. So that's become a bigger part. We still contribute equally. And as our loan amount has come down, we've been able to put more towards investing. My private loans are almost completely paid off at this point. We still have the federal loan pause. So more of that is going 50-50 to investing in equities like stocks and bonds, which now that spills over into a taxable account, and then 50% going towards real estate. But again, we're still saving that $10,000 we make every month. We actually take $1,000 of it and use it to pay off additional principal on our primary home mortgage. But other than that, it just is saved for buying more real estate. So that has grown more. Do you have to do that? No. Obviously, there's doctors who are really successful and only invest in real estate and are really passionate about doing that. And I think that's possible if you want to do that. And it's certainly possible to do no real estate and just say, I'm just going to save 20% of my income, invest in index funds, work at a job I like for 25, 30 years. And that's a perfectly good way to reach financial freedom and retire and live really well on your own terms. So it's whatever you want to do. But I tell people, I think investing in real estate is an awesome way to accelerate that path. And even if you just want to do it more passively with syndications or a fund, as long as you select your sponsors and who you invest with, I think that's also a really great way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of a semi-balanced portfolio. And like I said, we definitely lean towards more real estate investing as well for all the reasons that you said. And we didn't even hit on some of the other benefits, like the tax benefits of real estate and depreciation and all those things as well that certainly come into play as benefits to investing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been huge for us because my wife has real estate professional status for the past 2 years. So that's been huge in terms of the tax savings against our W-2 and getting some pretty sizable refunds tax-wise, which again, just help you accelerate paying off debt. And even this last, which was a big move for me, my usual response is, okay, let's just take that refund and just use it to all invest or all whatever. But we took a good chunk of it and put it aside for vacation, and we were buying a playground, like a playset for our kids. So another example of that intentional spending.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to hear that. Yeah, real estate professional status is incredible. I'm trying to talk my wife into doing it and getting it. And I got her on board for real estate investing for the most part. And I think that having your wife in your corner is just so helpful for
investing. Yeah.
Absolutely. I had to tempt her with short-term rentals. She loves interior design and photography and staging and some short-term rentals. So that would keep her happy. And she does an amazing job at it. So yeah, I do whatever it takes to get the wife interested and involved. But certainly grateful for her. That's fantastic. The other thing I've read in your blog a lot, and you mentioned a lot, is being a dad. How do you, being a good dad, being a plastic surgeon, being the prudent plastic surgeon, investing in real estate, how do you balance all of that?
I don't know. It's tough. I don't think I'm perfect at it, for sure. It takes a lot of time management and time prioritization. And we talked about before, what I try to do with a lot of the side stuff is stack it. So I'll find a time when I have a chunk of time and we'll just do my blog post for the week at that point. And there's some weeks I don't get to that. And that's why I stay ahead and I have a reserve of blog posts ready to go. And then also, I think it's about, as you grow and scale, finding who, not how, kind of people to help you. And we've done that kind of with family. My sister helps me with the blog stuff in terms of social media and posting the posts that I write. And my brother helps us manage the properties. It's kind of a side gig to his job, and obviously pay them for that. So that stuff has been helpful. And I think you just always keeping everything in perspective about why we do this to begin with, because why did we want financial freedom and passive income was to spend more time with our family. So if that starts taking away from it, it doesn't totally make sense. So just trying to find that balance. And like I said, I don't think I've found it. And there's some weeks and months I do a much better job than others. But it always, I think, trying to and keeping that in perspective is important.
Yeah, agreed. It's tough being so busy as doctors and then all these other things that we're involved in and investing. I feel the same way. I found, for me, little things, just like when I get home from work, I try and just put my phone up on top of the counter and I don't touch it until I put my son to bed. And just little things like that for me have been really helpful, because I want to just try and be as present with him as possible. And I apologize if you heard him crying earlier.
I had a baby crying in the background too.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, we know how that goes. But yeah, I think it's just part of it's just showing up and being present. And so I do try to do that as much as I can. And again, same goals as you, do this for passive income, for freedom, financially, to spend more time with my family ultimately. So I think having those priorities are really important for going forward.
Yeah.
Last question I had for you is just, what's one piece of advice you'd give to a new intern who's getting started in residency?
Just create really, I guess this will be on the financial side. The overall advice is just learn to be the best doctor that you can be. That's your purpose in residency. What I always try to tell them is, in terms of financial well-being and that stuff, it's important to think about. You don't want to completely neglect it, but it does need to be something that's on the forefront of your mind every day. Just create simple little habits. Try to create a small savings rate. The rule of thumb is 20%. That's tough as a resident. Try to do 5% or something like that. And then just use that to pay off loans a little bit or to invest a little bit. Just do something like that so that you're heading in the right direction. And then when you get to that point where you're going to start making more money, those habits just go on autopilot. You don't have to think about saving a portion of your paycheck. And that just sets you off on such a good foot, because it's really easy to save money that you haven't spent. But if you're a couple years out of training and you're trying to scale back money you've already spent to create savings, that's a lot tougher. Not that it can't be done. It certainly can. And someone in that position is totally able to be successful. But building those habits early, I think, is important. And then focusing again on becoming the best doctor, because that's really where your attention should be.
Completely agree. That's perfect advice. I wanted to give you a moment, if you'd like, to just plug Prudent Plastic Surgeon, what you're doing there. Also talk a little bit more about your course, Graduating to Success, if you'd like, and just give you a moment to share what you have to offer there.
Yeah, thanks. No, so my site's the Prudent Plastic Surgeon. It's www.prudentplasticsurgeon.com. And I just basically share my story and thoughts and advice and successes and mistakes as I'm continuing on this journey. And again, I'm still on it. I haven't reached that goal. So there's a lot of stuff I'm still learning, and I enjoy learning from the community as much as I do sharing to it. And yeah, my course is called Graduating to Success. And it's basically just a course that goes through that transition from being a resident or fellow to becoming an attending, and build the infrastructure you need to achieve financial freedom and have financial well-being. It's not exclusively for residents or fellows. There's aspects in terms of finding the right job and going about that job search in there, but also even for people who have graduated or just looking for more of the personal finance aspect. It's everything that I wish that I knew packed into one.
That's awesome. Sounds like a great course. We'll be sure to put the link in the show notes and the link to the website as well. What's a good place for folks to reach out to you if they want to know more or get in contact with you?
Yeah, you can go through my site and message me, or my email is jordan@prudentplasticsurgeon.com. And definitely feel free to shoot me emails. I love responding and talking to people about this stuff and meeting people. So don't hesitate.
Awesome. Really appreciate it. Thanks again, Dr. Fry, for your time. I really appreciate the wealth of knowledge that you shared and offered to the community. It's been fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex. And thanks for everything you do as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, with that, it's been Dr. Jordan Fry and Dr. Alex Schlow with another episode of the Physicians and Properties podcast. Signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance, and talk to you on the next episode. Please note that the information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.